Time to take a look at home improvement and repair issues here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guests, John Viner, John Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Chad Spate not with us yet, but he'll soon be here. Chad's owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and these two guys come by every other month or so to talk with us about what's going on in the home energy area, the home improvement area, and repair area. And certainly, if you have some questions for them, I hope you'll join us. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. John, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks, Larry.
Let's talk first about the, before we go to the phones and everything else, let's talk about the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I know a lot of people know about it, but tell us what you're all about.
Yeah, the Energy Center, we're a nonprofit located here in Madison. We have probably 40-some employees, and many of them really focus on education, energy education, whether it's related to residential buildings or commercial buildings. We hosts anywhere from maybe a dozen residential trainings to two dozen commercial type related building performance trainings. But in the energy industry, we're really known for a lot of the research that we do. What is the potential for energy savings, for example? And we may take a close look at different technologies and whether how well they're actually working in the field. So we have a team of excellent researchers that really get to the bottom of what works and what doesn't.
Well, it's great to have you back. And we have a caller online. Actually, we had a question before we get to the calls. Let's take one from a caller who wondered about wet basements and how do you keep a dry basement?
Yeah, well, basements can get wet from a couple of different ways, whether the water is coming from the exterior or even in the springtime when we get that first warm day and we open up the house, we can get that first blast of humid air into our cold basements and we get condensation on the inside of the walls or certainly our cold water pipes, and we can start getting a little bit of musty smell. As a result of condensation and humidity. But really, obviously, the first line of defense is that gutter and the grading away from down the sides of our house and having it flow away from the home. You know, they like to see that kick out at the bottom of the gutter is a good 6 feet. And, you know, the standards are a quarter inch per foot slope on that grade away from the house. But obviously, we got to start there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking back, I don't know, it's probably 6-7 years ago now with at our homestead, the home where I grew up. My sister and brother live there now, and they were having wet basement issues, and I went over, and sure enough, the ground had settled right next to the wall.
Yep.
And so it was a sort of a depression, built that up a little bit, and that made a big difference.
Yeah, and often the shrubbery really can hide that fact.
Yes.
You don't.
Yeah.
You think you have it, but you get on your hands and knees and play in the dirt a little bit, and you can learn quite a bit.
Chad Spade joins us from Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Great to have you here, Chad.
Thanks, Larry.
It's great to actually get into the building.
Traffic's a little heavy out there. So how's business? Are you doing a little work?
It's okay. Yeah, I mean, we're staying busy, but, you know, could be busier.
Always, I guess you could always be busier. Tom in Wanakee has a question for you guys, so let's go there. Tom, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Say, we're looking at putting in a replacement tub and shower unit. The unit we're looking at is a Sterling Accord. It's a modular unit. My question is regarding setting the base. Some people mention putting a cement or like a slurry that hardens or whatever down just for additional support of the base of the tub unit. Or I guess they do this if you were doing a shower. And some don't. And I wondered if Chad had any experience on this or recommendations or opinions, period.
Yes, well, we would generally recommend that you set the tub or the base in some sort of a slurry because that's going to stiffen the unit, and long term it's just going to provide a more durable tub or shower base. Our plumbers do that. It's just, you know, that's part of a what I would consider to be a professional installation. But like many things that people who are quality conscious will insist on, it's not necessarily required in the building code. So I would recommend that you do it.
Yeah. Good. All right.
Glad to hear.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Lee and Clam Lake. Lee, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you very much.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I hope this is in keeping with the program. It does have to do with the lower level of my home.
Okay.
Our guest room is in the lower level. Above our guest room is our master bedroom. And the thing that has always bothered me is the noise that my guests are hearing with footsteps and dogs, and because we have hardwood floor in our master bedroom. So what kind of a recommendation for, is there an acoustical insulation? What would be best to try and soundproof the ceiling for the guest room?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, that can be very challenging sometimes. Is there duct work running through that ceiling?
No, there is not.
Okay, well, that
helps.
That's very helpful because that is often...
My husband will like to hear that.
Yes, I mean, that because what will happen is what I'm about to recommend, if it is done in a ceiling that has duct work running through it, it becomes almost impossible to get the desired result. But
yeah,
without duct work, generally we'll recommend... dense packing the joist cavities with cellulose, no vapor barrier, but dense packing so that we effectively damper noise between the two levels. It's a very low-cost way to reduce sound and heat transmission from floor to floor.
Okay.
Then additional things can be done in finishing the ceiling down there. By creating some dead air space, if there's enough headroom, one great approach is to put up something. There's a product called Soundboard, or it's essentially just a kind of a flake board, or some people call it beaver board. It's essentially just a relatively dense half inch thick particulate board. And you put that up, and then you put up furring strips, and then your finished material. And so you've created another air cavity for sound to bounce around in.
Okay.
And then on the higher end, you can look at doing some things with various types of spacers, rubber gaskets. You know, there are different applications that can be used to really go all out to almost eliminate sound transmission.
Do you have a name for this cellulose insulation? Is it insulation?
It is. It's an insulation product, and we typically will utilize it when we remodel a basement because it's doing a couple of things that our clients are wanting to achieve. You would really just contact an insulation contractor, and they would come out and they would apply that.
They kind of blow it in, don't they? But it's really dense once it's in.
That's correct.
Okay.
But it's very affordable. I mean, it's not expensive to have this material installed.
Okay, so it's a blown-in insulation.
That's correct.
Okay, great. Well, that certainly helps.
All right, thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call, Lee. And more callers online. Let's go to Chuck in Milwaukee. Hi, Chuck.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm trying to get a head start on spring cleaning, and cleaning my basement floor. It's an old concrete floor, and it seems that no matter how much I mop it, the water isn't clean. And I'm wondering if the concrete itself is coloring the water. And the second question is, if I were to paint the basement floor, is there any problem if I get seepage every year or if the concrete tends to get a little damp in terms of the paint adhering?
Good questions. I would say that whenever you've got moisture rising through a cement floor, you're going to have to use a vapor permeable paint, because if you don't, you're not likely to achieve success with that paint product. It's going to blister and flake because there's too much water pressure, hydrostatic pressure, and yeah. and you know, using a paint-on product to keep water out on the inside of a cement surface is a very difficult thing to achieve success with, unless you have a relatively dry surface. That you know, so then it can maybe add a little bit of additional vapor blockage. But I would stay away from anything that's going to try to lock in that moisture. You're going to want to let that moisture come up into the room and then dehumidify. I'm not sure what to say about cleaning the floor. I mean, if it's hard to clean the floor, then it might be hard to successfully paint the floor.
Yeah.
It will need to be thoroughly washed and prepared prior to any sort of a paint applied to it.
How old is the basement floor? I mean, how old is it?
It's got to be about 100 years.
So wouldn't you guess chalking? And
yeah.
I would guess chalking.
And the cement, you know, cement does eventually return to dust. So at 100 years, you know, and all the
vapors.
That's
why it's probably looking dirty all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's not much I can do about it then, it sounds like.
Well, you know, you're looking to just to be able to walk around down there and, you know, have it be a little cleaner, perhaps.
What about a skim coat of new concrete on it?
Well, that's a possibility, though. Again, you might have issue. I mean, that will give you that, you know, kind of fresh layer, but I don't know how well it will adhere. And then, you know, there could be other issues. There are some leveling products that that are designed to be applied in a thin coat. And, you know, that might actually, you know, give you a new surface and you get some more use out of it and it will remain vapor permeable, so you don't have to worry about that. That might be an approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There you go.
That's very helpful. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have an email from John in Green Bay. It says, it takes a long time to get warm water at our kitchen sink due to the distance from the gas water heater in our 17-year-old ranch home. Even though the basement pipes are insulated, a lot of water is wasted down the drain, and we might just as well wash hands with cold water, because if you turn on the hot water tap, the hand washing will be done before the temperature warms. Do you feel that it would be cost-effective to install a small electric water heater in line under the kitchen sink? What do you think, John?
That's one possibility. An alternative to that is a recirculating pump that you can mount that when you walk into the bathroom, the kitchen or a master bedroom, what have you, you can hit a switch and this pump will take the water from the hot water heater and circulate it back to your fixture and then back into the cold water line and back to the water heater. So it actually creates a loop with electric pump so that if you wait just a matter of seconds, there's no water down the drain. The pump has brought the hot water to you.
Huh.
Then you can turn on your fixture, your faucet for the hot water. So that's it can be retrofitted. I think there's even a website called gothotwater.com that you can see one strategy. They have some nice schematics on how to install that unit and where you might be able to purchase the parts. So I probably would go that route before I went with electric heater.
All right. Well, that makes I've never heard of that. Gothotwater.com, eh? There you go. Let's take some more calls here at 1-800-642-1234. Or again, email us at talk@wpr.org. We've got some open lines, so we'll get you on pretty quickly. Again, at 1-800-642-1234. Larry Mueller here, my guests today. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Larry Mueller with our producer, Judith Sears-Poisson, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair today with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Thanks for listening in. Again, join us with your questions and comments. Donna in Hartfield has joined us, so let's go to Donna. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm
sure.
An avid listener, but a first-time caller. And I'm happy to support WPR, I might add.
Thank you.
My two questions really are, first of all, my parents' home is about 55 years old. It's a ranch-style home. And for about 50 of those years, we've had water issues. And it's the repairs are long overdue. And in looking for companies that will come out and, you know, survey the damage and give quotes on what they would suggest, I'm a little leery about approaching the top two or three in the area, and I'm just wondering if you could give me some good advice as to what I really want to look for in these companies.
Yeah, Donna, what kind of moisture problems are you having?
Is it basement or?
Yeah, basement problems. I should have clarified that. There's just a lot of water leakage, basically between the floor and the wall, where the floor and the wall meet. And, well, now we're having issues around the window well windows and things, too. As far as I know, tile was never laid around the outside of the home. And so that's basically been our nemesis for all these years.
Is there a sump pump in there?
Yes.
Yeah,
we would have floated way a long time ago if there wasn't.
Group of individuals, building performance consultants, they aren't going to do the implementation, but they certainly have the capacity and the knowledge to help you design and lay out the options to keep that, whether it's, you believe it's from rainwater, or do you think you have a high water table somewhere that's leaching in?
It's not leaking all the time. I should tell you that it's, you know, mostly during the rainy seasons. Of course, during the spring thaw, I'm looking forward to in the next month or so seeing the trickles and the rivers coming through
right.
the walls.
Okay.
But we are a lower lying lot, even between our two neighbors, and we lay low according to the neighborhood.
So if it's that 55 ranch, if there's energy issues at the same time, or if you're looking to make other types of upgrades related to energy and improving comfort and controlling the moisture, the building performance consultants that you can find, one website that you can find them at is the Midwest Building Performance Association. They have a list of consultants that come out for a modest fee to provide a little, pretty much of a whole house analysis that they certainly can focus on that water issue for you. Let me just give that website out. That's Midwest Building Performance Association. That's MWBPA.org. They have a nice list. Again, they're not necessarily implementers, but having that third party analysis can be very beneficial and provide a broad scope of the types of things you could do with the home.
Okay, and if you don't mind, a quick second question. We're looking into applying for county or possibly state weatherization assistance.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if we qualify yet, but looking into that. However, of course, they have their own contractors, and just wondering if either of the guests have any experience or knowledge of the contractors who might do work for that program, and if, I hate to ask this, but if they're reliable.
Yeah, I think if you can be a part of that weatherization program, that's certainly a good way to go. The training that the installers get are some of the best in the nation, to be honest, here in Wisconsin as far as the weatherization angle. So that would take precedence over, you know, if you're able to get into that into the low-income program and qualify, then that would precede my recommendations for the Building Performance Association. Not that they're not qualified, but I think you'd want to stick with that route from beginning to end. And like I said, I can speak highly of those agencies and their subcontractors and doing a great job.
All right.
Very fine. Thank you. It helped to put my mind at ease.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Donna. And we turn to another caller here. Let's go to Jim in Black River Falls. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Yeah, I have the good fortune of building a new home, and we're putting in-floor heat in the basement. And then my question is, between the first floor and the basement, do I want to have some heating vents to bring that heat up to the main floor, or would I be better to sheetrock it and insulate it to keep the noise out?
Well,
yeah, what do you think, Jack?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to decide what your priorities are there, because you could do either of those things. And then there are also some well-designed dampers that would allow for some heat transfer to occur and also help to damper the noise. I mean, it's not, you know, once you have an open path for air to flow, then sound will flow through it as well. But there are some things out there that can help to deflect some of the sound and allow the heat to rise, because the heat will, you know, you will get that convection in the home naturally. And so you can employ some strategies for sound deadening that don't include the dense pack insulation, for example, so that heat will transfer better, but sound will get deflected in air pockets. So, you know, that I think I might recommend that sort of approach so that you can achieve both goals simultaneously.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had an email from Diane from New Auburn. I have a Scandinavian-style roof from 1973 with timber frame construction and a plank ceiling roof deck. It was reshingled in 2003 with the foam strips, plywood, and half airspace above the foam, half-inch airspace above the foam. It has two heavy rafters and two large Pella skylights, you know, windows. Mm-hmm. It has a ridge vent, but no lower ventilation. So it's just a ridge vent. Because these shingles were defective, I need to re-roof. I received a small settlement from the shingle company. What options do I have for improving ventilation this time around? So she's got the, you know, any recommendations might you have?
And so, Larry, there was the roof deck, and then foam sheathing.
Yes,
and then furring strips for a space.
Yes,
and that's the venting system right there. Is that space between the foam and the actual roof itself? She has ridge vents, but no low vents, which we know we need to get that air moving, right? I guess we need to know the what's at the edge, or if there's an eave there, huh, Chad?
Yeah, because the construction detailing might allow for some sort of a vent to be installed right at the edge of the drip edge at the bottom of the roof deck there. And it could be that there is some ventilation taking place inadvertently based on the way that it's described. But more often than not, there will be blocking installed down there that's actually preventing that from occurring. So
yeah, it really takes an on-site analysis on this one to make sure we get that right.
Right.
I believe you are both correct in that. Let's go to Greg in New Glarus. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Larry and guests. We're in at the stage in a basement refinishing, a total basement refinishing project on a 15-year-old house. We have just completed exterior wall 2x4 framing, and have not decided how to go with insulating those walls. No moisture problems, and we've been to a couple of home shows lately, and I'm kind of leaning towards the spray foam. Cost is an issue, but would you have a general recommendations for that situation?
Sure, absolutely. So we've got 2x4s in place, and you've held that 2x4 framing system maybe an inch off the concrete wall?
Yes.
And wiring is in or not? Not quite yet.
Wiring is not completed yet.
Okay, great. So an insulation system that we can span that entire foundation wall, right? Versus simply just filling the cavities of that framed wall with, say, fiberglass, which is a pretty standard practice, though not really recommended. The spray foam, where you can actually, You know, with that inch gap between the framing and the concrete wall, you're able to spray that foam behind each and every stud and get a monolithic insulation system along that concrete wall. And that's really going to be the best for you is a way to do that. The alternative to spray foam would have been more of a rigid foam that you would put up, whether it's pink or blue board, the extruded polystyrene, or a foil-faced foam board. But generally, that's what you want to put up before you'd put the framing. So now that the framing is up, best and recommendation simply to go with the spray foam.
Yeah, and one of the advantages of applying that two-part spray foam, which will have to be professionally installed, but the advantage is it's going to lock your framing to the wall because that foam's going to expand and harden, and it's going to give you some moisture protection, excellent air sealing and insulating, and a little bit of additional stiffness to the structure. So it's a win-win that application.
And then don't put up the plastic vapor barrier on the framed in the basement wall. It's even against code to put up a flexible polyethylene down on that basement wall. So just keep that off and go with a closed-cell foam up against the foundation.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Pat in Fox Point, we are on to you now. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. I've got a house built in 1969. It's on a water boiler system. Pretty large house, and for some reason, it's on 11 separate zones for the heating. There's a thermostat running down to each one of those valves. I've got one room in particular that just constantly stays cold. I've done, and when I had a remodel a couple years ago, the HVAC contractor told me that heat vent for some reason runs wild, that there's no thermostat going directly down to that. I've done the bleeding thing. I've asked them about possibly putting in a valve specifically for that one, but the radiator always just constantly stays lukewarm but never really gets hot. I just wonder if there's any other options for me.
Well, it sounds like you've identified that it is the heating system because, that's an important question to ask and answer because sometimes we find that a room is never quite comfortable because it's got some serious air leaking and insulation issues that contribute to the comfort. And, the radiator, and it doesn't sound like you have this problem, but it could be, the radiator works fine, but it just can't heat the room.
Right. But, and I've done the visqueening the windows, and there's really nothing major that I could see feeling draft wise.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like an issue that the heating contractor is going to have to troubleshoot. Is it not possible to run a wire with a new thermostat on that?
It's on the second floor. And it goes all the way down. The valves themselves are all in the basement. And I don't know why he said that this one radiator runs wild, quote unquote.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a job for a professional to come in and really do that.
I thought maybe there might be something that you guys could just top of the head. So thanks for your help.
Yeah, right. Sorry about that.
Thanks very much for calling. And Todd in Williams Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you? Love the show.
Thank you.
This is my first time calling.
Well, thanks for calling.
I live in a lowland marsh area, and the house was built in probably the 40s, and we have a lot of swamp area around us, and we constantly get about 8 to 12 inches of water in our basement, and we only have one industrial sub pump. And it just can't keep up. Would you recommend that we need a new, more industrial sub pump, or what would be my route in getting rid of this water?
Boy, that's a lot of water.
That is a lot of water.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Is everyone healthy? And, I get very concerned when you have that much water in a home.
It usually happens. I love the show. It usually happens all the time.
Oh man!
Like every spring, it leaks in, and I don't know if I need more sub pumps or if there's something I can do to stop the water from penetrating. And I know that we live in a marsh area, and it's a little hard to deal with.
Yeah, what do you use the basement for right now? Is it
well? Well, we just got the house about a year ago, and it kind of they redid the floor, so we had all we really had down there was a bunch of our stuff that now has been destroyed.
Right, right.
But that's really about it. I mean, not much of anything else now because of the water.
Yeah, if it's that much water, I'm trying to think of a way to go with the flow, so to speak, and how do you encapsulate or just allow that to take place but build a good barrier, and you just can't store things down there, but that's your last option.
Yeah, I had a good concrete guy, John Frankel, came over and kind of was going and told me I could pour about 10 inches of concrete down there, and that might suffice in keeping the water out. Which I said that was not right.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think the environment that you live in there is really dictating drastic measures, which it's hard to stop, and that flow of water is what it appears to me.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only other thing I would say is if, you know, not knowing if there's a good drain tile system under the current floor, if you do have the space to give up and you want to add material rather than digging down and putting in a drain tile and perhaps a few, one or more extra sumps and sump pits, you know, you could create that drain field prior to putting down an additional floor layer. But it sounds like you need to have a really aggressive water management system, and I would have a backup pump.
Oh.
And, you know, that just, it's not a healthy environment, and it's also not really good for the building above, you know, for the building materials to have that much moisture inside the structure.
So you're going to have another... at least another sump pump, I would think, wouldn't you?
I would think so, and certainly pumping out the water. I mean, if you can't keep it from coming in with landscaping and possibly looking at some waterproofing to the exterior, though it sounds like the water table is the issue, and
yeah.
So I don't think there's much that can be done other than pump it far away, but that's a lot of energy and effort and expense going into trying to, you know, stop nature from
that's the other thing. If how far away can you pump it before it comes back in, if you're
right?
Yeah, it kind of pumps about 40 feet from the house right now out into like a drainage ditch, and that's about it really. Otherwise, it doesn't really pump really anywhere else.
We're drawing good blanks here.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, it's at least another sump pump. At least I would think. Sorry, Todd. I wish we had more a better answer for you on that one, but you're going to have to. I'd probably get somebody else out there to take a look at it. I mean, you really need to get somebody to look at it carefully and offer some good advice. And who would you have? Probably a contractor?
Yep, basement foundation content? Water mitigation company that certainly out there that they can at times have worked miracles, but not each and every time.
Not every time.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. That's cool of you.
All right, Todd. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. We have Lee from, let's go to Gino in Birchwood next. Gino, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
Well, listen, I have a small problem with my crawl space. It's a 4-foot block on top of concrete thing there, and some of the blocks are above grade, and I noticed that any any humidity in the basement at all causes condensation, especially in the winter, to be on that wall. So I went ahead and put 2-inch insulation up there, but I got to thinking 10 R10 might not be quite enough. Should I add more insulation down there to help mediate that problem?
So you put that 2 inches of foam board to the inside within that crawl space, right?
That's correct.
And do you have a vapor barrier on the ground then, a nice heavy plastic?
Yes.
Within the crawl space, and ideally best practices is to have that as you know, we want that continuous across that floor, and then ideally we wrap it up the sides. And I know it becomes difficult, but sealing the edges on all sides, on each of the sides of the room to that foundation wall, so we trap that moisture from that ground. If that will be one source, whether it's the biggest source, I don't know, but we certainly want to take care of that. So that condensation, first we want to take care of that source of moisture, and then we can take a look at insulating and preventing that moisture from reaching that concrete wall. We can insulate with that 2 inches of foam board up against that wall, but if where things might go astray is that if we don't have that nice and airtight, where if we have seams at the bottom and the top of that foam, or where butt ends meet, where air leakage, which when I say air leakage, I say moisture leakage, because now we're going to make that concrete wall even colder potentially because we put insulation in front of it. And if moisture still reaches that block wall, we can, you know, still aggravate condensation. So we need that plastic on the bottom. Really best practice, what I've seen, is that poly wrapped up the sides of that crawl space foundation wall, and then spray foam sprayed to as an insulating material and an adhesion of that plastic to that concrete block wall. And then that monolithic spray foam system has no seams, no gaps, and we've done an excellent job with our air barrier / moisture prevention from traveling and hitting that block wall. Then it's looking at other moisture sources that we might have within the home. I wouldn't rush to add more insulation first.
Well, what I noticed was that the actual condensation was only above grade. It wasn't below grade, but because there was condensation occurring from the air, apparently, in the colder blocks, that was where the moisture was coming in. I was just wondering if adding a little bit more insulation would help alleviate that problem.
Adding more insulation on the inside, really what we want is a solid air barrier. I mean, if we added that insulation on the exterior of that above-grade foundation wall, then we're doing something to keep that foundation wall warmer and limit condensation. That's why we don't have condensation on the below-grade part, because it's a few degrees warmer than the above-grade section of that foundation wall. Adding that insulation to the interior like you've done, it can work, but we are going to make now even the below-grade section colder than it was. And that temperature essentially relates back to the dew point of condensation. And by insulating to the interior, if we don't have a solid air barrier in front or solid air barrier made with that foam sheathing, we can aggravate problems. Now, adding more insulation or a foam sheathing to the exterior and putting a nice finished product on it, then we keep the inside surface of that crawl space warmer. And with moisture mitigation measures taking place on the inside of the home is probably a better practice to go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager in the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we talk home renovation and repair with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Thanks for listening in. We have Roger in Fitchburg with a question for you guys. Let's go to Roger. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. On another call-in program, a guy mentioned compressed wool. He said it had terrific ability to deal with high and low temperatures, that it's 2.5 inches thick, that it's from Austria or Switzerland, not made in the United States. But I hoped you would give me an idea of the disadvantages of using that, give us an idea of the cost and so forth.
Compressed wool.
For an insulation material you're speaking to.
Yes.
Really what we find locally here, I know, is mineral wool, and I don't think that's probably, you're looking at more of a specialized product when you speak to the compressed wool. So I don't know that product specifically. Mineral wool, those has lots of advantages that it can, you know, has a nice fire rating. It can be placed up against chimneys, etc., and is easy to work with. Chad, you have any experience with compressed?
I don't. I've heard of the product, but it's not something that I've ever really had the opportunity to work with or to learn more about. So,
well, people most interested in the ecology, it was suggested, would find this appealing. Is the mineral wool a strictly artificial product?
No.
It's not from the sheep.
No, it's a fiber bat product.
Which means it's not from the sheep.
That's correct? Right. Correct. Right. I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
I would think it would be an awfully expensive product, but
yeah.
I'm just trying to find something out about it right now, and I'm not. Nothing's coming up from here.
No experience with the compressed wool. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Somebody else may have had some experience, so stay listening, Roger. If we get a call, we'll put that person on.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had Debbie from Trempolo wondering what you would recommend for materials to use for building a new low or no maintenance deck on the west side of her house. What's out there?
Well, the first thing that you've got to be very careful about on the west side of a home is that you don't want to use any dark materials because they're going to get incredibly hot in the sun. And I know that some of the synthetic materials are available in a wide array of colors. And if you go that path, then you'll probably want to stick with lighter materials, particularly for the decking, so that it's, you know, more comfortable to be out there in the sun. There are a lot of products available. Some have recycled content in them. I generally would recommend sticking with products that have been around a while so that they have a track record. And I think Consumer Reports has had at least one good survey of decking that I would always recommend that as a good source.
Yeah.
There have been some products out there, some interesting products, which have not, you know, worked out as well as we may have hoped. I mean, there was once a cornstarch-based plastic resin that
didn't work well.
Yeah, it just didn't hold up. So
there you go. We have Dave in Madison starting a do-it-yourself basement remodel project. I've heard various opinions on the use of a vapor barrier against the cement block walls prior to insulation and drywalling. I plan to use extruded polystyrene insulation directly attached to the cement block. Do I need to use a vapor barrier?
No, the answer is no, huh, Chad?
Yeah, don't do it.
It's even, we want that great continuous insulation, like I spoke to before. The foam board can do the job, and we want to keep that vapor barrier off to the inside, and we don't want to apply it under any type of foam sheathing. The foam sheathing is going to be do the job that we need it to do.
All right. Let's go to Sarah in Elkhorn then. Sarah, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was actually just going to give a suggestion to the gentleman. I don't know if his name was Todd with the 8-inch water issue in his basement.
Yeah.
Our house was built in the 1940s, and we also had issues with water coming in. And we, I don't know if I can make this suggestion here on the phone, but there was a company in Fort Atkinson that helped us out, and they basically set up all to the base of the basement water guard, and then basically had a high system sump pump with a battery backup, and it shoots actually out into the sewer system right in town here. I live right in town. And that seems to work great. We haven't had any issues since then.
Well, there are code issues with putting sump water into the municipal sewage system, because what will happen is you have an extreme rain event, and they're becoming much more common, where we'll get more than 2 inches of rain in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, any water that's, you know, the drain, the various systems for water mitigation, you know, street drains and ditches and all that, will become overwhelmed, as will the sewage system. And so, you know, it's just not a good practice from a kind of a broader kind of sustainability perspective. Obviously, you know, if only a couple of people did it, it wouldn't cause a great problem. But then the problem is, you know, when many people do it, it can overwhelm that system.
Okay.
And so I know in many municipalities in Dane County, it is against the law. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know they worked, the group that did it for us, they worked with our city.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get an ordinance. We had a building permit and everything all set up. So it was already... had worked with the city with...
Oh, well, good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And, I mean, it is possible that, you know, there might be certain circumstances where, you know, a city would sign off on that.
Right.
So I don't want to... Yeah.
Given an extreme circumstance.
Yeah, because they did say initially they wouldn't do it unless the city approved it. And so that I went to the city and they approved it for me. So,
okay. Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
what was
yeah.
the name of the company?
It was called Badger Basement.
Badger Basement.
Yep.
In Fort
right
Atkinson.
In Fort Atkinson, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much. Appreciate it. Appreciate the call, Sarah. And Todd might be giving a call to them. You never know. You never know. Rick in Wales, we go to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I had a couple suggestions for one the gentleman that was going to paint his basement floor.
Yeah.
You give it an acid wash beforehand. I've done this a couple different times. You acid wash it. Get yourself a good pair of shoes that you don't care about anymore just so they don't leak into your feet. But... mop it up really well, and then give it a couple coats of just clear water to get that acid off. Let it dry for about 48 hours. And come back with the cement staining product. That'll give you the permeability that you're looking for. So if you do get water again or you get moisture, it's not going to be trapped underneath that layer. You won't get that same blistering effect. In fact, I've done this where the basement is flooded afterwards, but the stain itself is actually adhered to the concrete. You know, you still get the water on top, and the stain is not damaged at all by the water. The only issue with the stain is that it's really susceptible. If you're dragging something across the floor, you will get a scratch. But
yeah.
it's fairly easy to take a little excess stain and go back over that scratch, and there's no harm, no foul. The second thing about the gentleman that his basement is flooding, he should most definitely put in another sump pump, another sump hole. And it's not that difficult to do. I've done it myself. And he should set it up so he's got two pumps in each hole. The faster he can get the water out of the house, the better off he's going to be.
Yeah.
That was just about it.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Good
yeah,
tips. Thank good. You. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the call very much. Ron in Manitowoc, we're on to you now. Hi, Ron.
Thanks, Larry.
Sure.
I'm wondering if the boys have any preference between two-bys or drywall clips for fastening drywall in corners of rooms.
Chad?
Well, it depends on the application. We try... you know, when we're framing a structure, typically we have not used the drywall clips, but we will use some minimal blocking to allow the corner to be properly insulated, because traditional framing has a downfall of creating inaccessible corners that are very difficult to properly air seal and insulate. And so we can minimize framing and allow the insulator to get in there and fill up the cavity and seal it properly. And then often with just some creative placement of the framing, you know, we can have all the appropriate surfaces there to attach the drywall. I will say that up at the ceiling, at that particular junction, there are a number of things we want to think about, because if we have trusses on a structure, a lot of times we will get truss lift. We have to be concerned about the drywall breaking away from the wall. And there are a variety of techniques that are used to minimize or avoid that problem, primarily just not attaching the drywall within a couple of feet of that corner on the ceiling itself. But letting the drywall essentially float on top of the wall drywall. And then it will hold together if the truss is moving.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim in Norton, Wisconsin. Let's go to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good.
Say, I want to put some 2 inches of insulation around the outside of the basement. And the thing that I ran across is something that the Swedish people do. They'll put the sheet going against the concrete wall going the 4 foot depth from the plate to below ground, and then they take another sheet and put it horizontally on the bottom of that one, so that basically you've got an insulation layer that extends out past the block. What's the rationale with that, and would it work?
Are you talking about extending the insulation under the ground 4 feet out from the structure?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's a technique that is gaining some acceptance here in the States. Because basically, frost and the cold temperatures will not penetrate the ground if it's protected by a layer of insulation that heads out away from the structure, as opposed to simply going down. So what that would allow, for example, is we can put in a floating slab. Rather than going down 4 feet, we install a foundation that's maybe only 12 inches below ground, but then we're insulating out horizontally away from the structure, and that allows you to avoid problems of frost lift. So, yeah,
very interesting. And we can talk some more about that. We'll take up that issue right after we take a quick look at the news. We'll be back with our guests in just a few minutes. Stay with us. So happy to have you with us here on The Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here talking home renovation and repair today with my two guests, Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry in Madison and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Great to have them here, and thank you for listening in. Join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And just before our news break, we had a question about around a home providing horizontal insulation below grade. And Chad, maybe I'll go back to you for just a second to, again, explain that process and why it might be effective. And then, John, I want to get your comments.
Yeah, so the traditional foundation in our climate in Wisconsin, it forces us to go down 4 feet to avoid frost. So often we'll, dig down 4 feet and we'll put in a footing and then we'll build a foundation wall on top of that. But an alternative to that is to simply build right at ground level and to insulate out from the structure so that that cold air cannot penetrate beneath the structure that would be shallower in depth. So it might only penetrate the ground, say, a foot. And this sort of shallow construction technique has often been used for outbuildings or garages, warehouses, things like that. But then we've had to allow our freeze-thaw cycles to move those around. And one way to avoid that is to bury this insulation just below ground with a pitch kind of away from the structure so that water and the cold do not penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the building itself. Well, John, you want to add some more to that?
Sure. So one of the reasons it works and keeps that footing and frost wall warm is the pattern of which the path at which heat moves from underneath our slabs within our basements. So the heat that is in our house penetrates the concrete slab and then radiates to the underside of the slab, and then the heat actually moves in an arc pattern from the center, from underneath our concrete slab. And if you can picture it, comes out, it's got to find its way to the outside if the outside is colder, because heat's going to move from warm to cold. So as it penetrates underneath the concrete slab, it goes to the perimeter in an arc pattern and then rises at the perimeter of our building, and that horizontal pitched foam board that we will place on the outside of the home actually will trap some of that heat that is escaping in an arc pattern from underneath the slab.
Wow. Oh, interesting. And, as water issues or something might be a help in a situation where you might have a wet Would it help or would it not?
Well, it could. I mean, of course, you've got to have, you know, stable ground with any building. So you hopefully things aren't shifting around underneath. And if you've got a lot of water moving under any building, that can cause some problems. But if you do have a high water table, it's possible that you will stay above that and, have a drier, more comfortable building.
Michael in Oshkosh, we're going to go to you next. Hi, Michael. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm looking at hot water heat and doing some sort of solar hot water heater. And I'm wondering, what are the issues with that in a cold weather environment of Wisconsin? And what I was thinking about is, even if I could just get some sort of preheater to the hot water, so even if I warmed up the water 20, 30 degrees before it went into the hot water heater, that could still save me a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the way the systems, solar systems, are designed. Whether you're in Wisconsin or in other states, we are going to use it primarily as a preheater. And then if by chance in the summer months, we can, it'll not only preheat, but do 100% of your water heating here in Wisconsin. And then we've got that added benefit. So we have it. And then we can certainly design that solar hot water system, whether it's for domestic showers or to supplement a boiler and a radiant heating system as well. Wisconsin residents might spend $250 to $350 per year on heating hot water if they have natural gas, and the solar system certainly can save a percentage of that. Often they're designed to save 50 to 70% of that energy use throughout the year. So even in Wisconsin in a cold climate, certainly very beneficial. In December or January, where we have lots of cold months, it's just doing less. It might be in the 30 to 40% range, and in the summer months, we make it up in the 70 to 100% range, and it averages out.
Yeah, and
I was going to ask, what does a professional system like that cost, and is there a decent payback on that, and are there some cheaper do-it-yourself kind of methods for this?
The cost with state and federal tax credits, I mean, maybe we were bumping up to $10,000, $12,000 range for a solar hot water system, and then we can get 40 to 50%, I think off the top of my head. So we're maybe after incentives, $6,000, $7,000, and we may do a little bit better than that, I think. But certainly going to depend on the system and what you're using it for. Paybacks can I've done some analysis on the solar systems, and it can range from 6 to 10 year payback, maybe a little bit longer, depending again on the style of system that you have.
There you go.
Yeah, and I was just going to add that something that I learned last week attending the Better Building, Better Business Conference, which is an annual conference for cold weather climate building in the Dells, is that Wisconsin is actually a pretty good place for solar energy. I had not realized this. When you look at a map of the United States, it's the desert Southwest is really the hot spot for, great return on investment for solar energy. But then the heartland is about average in the world. It's, and so you compare us to, say, Germany, we have a lot more solar potential than Germany, and Germany happens to be leading the world right now in solar energy systems and production. So, what that suggested to me was that we've got a lot of opportunity right here in the Midwest to really tap that resource.
So. Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Michael, for calling. Appreciate your call. And just to make a mention here, if you'd like to see some of Chad's handiwork, the handiwork of Chad's carpentry, I should say, he put a gorgeous addition on the home of our producer, Judith, and she put a link to a slideshow of images on my Facebook page. So I hope you'll take a look. You can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And Chad, you've featured Judith's addition as your greenest addition yet. What makes it so green?
Well, there are a lot of things. I mean, the most obvious when you look at it from the outside is it's got PV panels, solar electric panels up on the roof. I think the last time I checked in with Judith about it, they were producing about half of their electric needs, and because MG&E has a buyback program where they will buy back that solar power and pay twice what they charge for electricity, they're able to pretty much break even on their electric bill. So, you know, that's a great deal, certainly. Their own power plant. We've got a metal roof on the structure, which is a 100-year roof, basically. Very little maintenance required. And we've got cement siding. We also have a slab that is thermally isolated from the... It's a slab on grade. Mm-hmm. We didn't employ that horizontal insulation technique, but we did thermally isolate the slab so that we've got solar mass within the structure, and that really helps to maintain a constant, comfortable temperature.
And it looks pretty inside, too.
Yeah,
it looks pretty nice inside, too. It is really pretty. So anyway, we have that up. Judith just put that up, as a matter of fact. So it's on the Facebook page. If you want to take a look, just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and there it is. All right. Well, let's go to David in Appleton next. David, hi.
Yeah, hi there. I'm remodeling a home built around the turn of this last century, a two-story. And I've got a 32-inch opening from the kitchen to the living room. I'm thinking of opening that up another 44 inches. And I'm wondering, how do I determine before I rip all the walls apart if that's a load-bearing wall, it's an interior wall? The ceiling joists in the living room are running perpendicular to the wall that I'd like to partially remove, not the whole wall, but, again, 44 inches of that wall. How do I, without ripping all the walls apart down, you know, the plaster and lath, how do I determine if it's a load-bearing wall?
Well, generally, when you have framing above a wall which is running perpendicular to that wall, then it can, you know, it is actually bearing on that wall. Whether or not that is the junction where the framing actually is not continuous, in other words, you know, it heads off in one direction, one piece of, say, 2x10 will rest on that wall and head off to the east, and right. Then another separate board next to it is headed to the west. And so that is right. Definitely a bearing wall, because those boards are not continuous over the wall. But even if the board is continuous, that wall might be serving as a structural wall that over the years has become a bearing wall. So we always have to be careful. And what I would recommend is that you just pretend that it is a bearing wall. Why not put in a header to carry the load? And someone at one of your local lumber yards, often most lumber yards will have someone on staff. If they're not an engineer, they will at least be someone that can size structural beams for you to have confidence and to be able to pull a permit. We have to, you know, you'd have to have information on what's above that wall, how many floors, how big of a span, essentially just a small kind of drawing of the building itself. And okay. then you have to be concerned about the loads at the two ends of that opening. You're going to end up creating about an 80-inch wide opening, it sounds like. So, the two sides of at either end of that beam, that's where the new loads will be, and we need to make sure that it's supported down below.
Sure. And do you recommend just standard, like, let's say, 2x lumber, you know, as your beam sandwiched between plywood versus, like, these laminated...
We're generally working with laminated beams these days because they are far superior in their strength and reliability to dimensional lumber. Because dimensional lumber always, because it's a natural product, you know, it's a tree, there's going to be inconsistencies and variability in the strength of it. And so because of that, we always have to use larger and larger pieces of dimensional lumber. A laminated product, because it's a plywood, it's basically a very thick piece of plywood, it's much stronger, and it's a much more efficient and sustainable way to use resources. So I would strongly recommend using the laminated beam.
All right. Okay.
Thanks. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And we have Ann in Janesville purchased a home in was built in 1922. She didn't purchase it then, but they purchased it in May of last year. It has a rear porch that was walled in and converted to a bathroom back in 2003. When they put in the bath, they didn't pour footings under the porch, so it's very cold in the winter and has little insulation. How possible is it to have footings poured with the room still there without tearing out the bathroom entirely?
Well, that's a tough one without seeing it. I mean, a lot will depend on how far above ground the old porch floor is, you know, and if it's, say, 4 feet above ground, it might be possible to dig a few post footings and then provide that proper support to the structure. And then insulation would probably be handled by insulating the entire shell, the floor or beneath the floor, and then up the walls and through the ceiling, but properly, encapsulating and air sealing that room. We do have to be careful when we're talking about a bathroom. We need to make sure that all the water pipes remain within that heated envelope.
Yeah.
So that's really critical.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got Pat in Heartland who has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We live in a side-by-side two-family, and when the building was built, the common wall is two separate walls about a foot apart. But we've been having trouble with the sound coming through from the other side ever since we moved here. Is there anything that we can blow in between the walls to cut that sound down?
Yeah, there should be. Sometimes those two walls, in addition to cutting the sound down, we may have an opportunity to reduce energy use as well. Sometimes where that common wall is, there's a lot of air leakage up at the top. So we'd want to identify that and make sure we tackle that issue if it exists as well at the same time that we blow, say, a cellulose product in between those two walls. So that is an option. If it's 12 inches, you know, it's pretty tight for somebody to get down in between there. But even though it is 12 inches, we can blow cellulose inside there and into that cavity and fill it up tightly. Ideally, we're reducing air leakage at the same time, reducing the amount of sound transmittance from one side to the other. If there's mechanical systems in that wall, we just want to know what's in there before we pump it full of cellulose, so we know we have access if we need to in the future, and we're not burying something that eventually will be important to gain access to at a later time.
Yeah, I know there's nothing in between the walls because we took the drywall down in one of the rooms to take a look to see what he had done. And normally when a builder builds a building like that, don't they put drywall on both sides of the walls?
Not always.
Not always?
Nope.
Okay, because there wasn't. And we could see that there was nothing in there. But we put double drywall on my dining room wall. That seemed to help a little bit, but we still get an awful lot of sound on the second floor, especially where the bedrooms are. Cellulose would be dense enough?
Yeah, absolutely. That would work as a good sound barrier.
Okay, I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And David in Brookfield, it's your turn. Hi, David.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Good.
I'm a remodeler myself, and I have a couple questions about flooring. I was going to put some engineered, pergo or something in my bathroom, and I was wondering what you thought about putting down, a fan board underneath that in the basement, and then radiant floor heat, what's the best way to use the PEX fins, the PEX radiant floor heat systems with the fins? Should I put an air barrier underneath that with our board, or insulate that with a two-part polyurethane foam to help protect that from the basement air?
What, so you're talking about putting a heated floor on an existing basement floor? Is that correct?
Sorry, it's two parts. One is for my first floor going up to the wooden floor and the subfloor underneath from the basement, and the other one is putting R-board on the basement floor to help with insulation and not putting a radiant floor system in the bathroom.
The basement. Okay, putting one in the basement. Okay.
Okay. Well, do you want to?
No, I'm not. So for the bathroom upstairs, and we're going to put radiant tubing underneath that bathroom floor, and that's correct, right?
Yes.
Yep, and we want to keep that insulation from going down to the basement. We want it to ideally flow upwards, so they usually have, you mentioned, a fan fold or reflective material that once we pin the PEX tubing up to the undersurface of the floor system, then we want to put that reflective material up first and then maybe some additional insulation or foam board underneath that. So we keep an air gap between the PEX tubing on the floor and then this foil fan fold, if we'd like. And then I think that maybe an additional foam board could add additional benefit there.
All right. And then for putting on the basement,
okay,
underneath my engineered floor, I'm just trying to make it more comfortable because, you know, walking around stocking footed, which I like to do, the concrete's quite cold, and I was just trying to figure out ways to make that more
warmer.
Do you know if there's a vapor barrier under the cement floor?
No, there is not. It's just a gravel. But I do have a radon system pulling out that I had installed 2 years ago.
Okay.
So an extruded polystyrene or a foam board of inch, you can lay that directly to the basement concrete floor and then build your subfloor on top of that for a finished product, whether we're just using extruded polystyrene an inch down if we got low on headroom and we go that thickness, and then some will lay down sleepers, 1x4s, laid down on top of that, and then we put our 3/4-inch plywood for our subfloor and our finished floor over that. The critical part, again, is the detail of air tightness of that foam. We're not, once we lay down the foam and all the sheets, it's caulking all those seams so that we don't get air leakage or moisture penetration to that slab below. We're not using caulking to seal it from air leakage, but we're caulking and sealing to prevent moisture problems at a later time.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And we've got time. Jane, have you got a quick question?
Yes. Earlier you had mentioned something about insulating a slab structure with foam board under, you know, digging it down. My husband and I have a slab structure in Kewaunee that we use as kind of a getaway, and that's how it's built. But it doesn't have any bathroom, no running water or anything. If we were able to use that procedure, could we add a bathroom to that structure?
Got about
a
minute.
Yeah, it's possible. Certainly, you know, once you've got running water, you've got to heat the structure or shut the water off. And, you know, I would recommend that if you're looking to bring a bathroom into a building, that, you know, that's a great opportunity to do detailing of air sealing and insulating just to make it more comfortable year round when you are there, and then to be able to accommodate that bathroom. So it's certainly possible.
Yep, there it is. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And John and Chad, thank you guys so much. You'll be back in a couple months. We'll do this again. And
thank
in the
you.
Meantime, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and take a look at what Chad's handiwork with Judas Home. It's really quite spectacular. And thank you all for listening. Monday, see another edition of Garden Talk tomorrow, and you'll want to